Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Secret by Lulu Moore. Narrated by Liam Price and Alyssa Avery. Prologue. We all know Mondays have a bad rep as the worst day of the week, but Tuesday sneaks up on you. Tuesday is the day that the serious shit goes down because you're lulled into the false sense of security that the worst day of the week is over. Because you're not ready for it. Because you're not looking over your shoulder. Case in point, Tuesday was the day Penn found out he'd flunked his midterms. Tuesday was the day Rafe got dumped by Bronwyn Chambers, his high school sweetheart, the girl he lost his virginity to, and the one who decided in the first week of college she'd rather be with a future pro athlete than a future lawyer. He cried for a while after that one. And Tuesday was the day Murray missed out on the finals of the Ivy League swimming conference, the one he was about to sweep gold on, because of a freak ice storm that caused him to slip outside the pool house and break his leg. So they did the only sensible thing they could do. They took a stance, and the Tuesday Club was born with three rules. No girls, no drama, no injuries. Tuesday was the new boys' night in at the Beacon Hill brownstone, and it continues to this day, with the same three members, who aren't paying close enough attention. Chapter 1. Murray. There's a pivotal moment in everyone's life that fundamentally changes who they are. Everyone has it. You don't know when it'll happen, but you know when it does. And in order to survive it, in order to get through the lung-crushing, heart-stopping, neck-breaking speed at which it occurs, you need your friends with you. Let me introduce myself. My name is Murray Williams, and the two bozos standing behind me arguing about the Yankees' new relief pitcher are my best friends in the world, Raith Latham and Penn Shepherd. Friends for over a decade, we met on the first day of college, where the three of us had been assigned the same dorm, and I was the Brit who'd flown in to have his higher education experience in the good old US of A. We sized each other up for 30 seconds, then cracked open some beers and bonded for life. I know what you're thinking. Why is he telling me this? Who cares? Why should I give a shit? And I'm almost in agreement. Except for one thing. Because that pivotal moment I mentioned, I was about to have mine. The doors to the elevator opened and Barclay let out a single bark, running forward down the long corridor, causing Rafe and Penn to momentarily pause their heated discussion about Ace Watson. That was odd. My black Labrador wasn't known for barking much. Huh. Rafe resumed his bouncing of the basketball he'd carried back from our weekly game as we followed Barclay in the direction he ran, toward my apartment door at the very end, where he was sniffing a large package, or box. I squinted down the darkened hallway. Was that a baby car seat? Barclay stopped sniffing and was now whining softly, lying down as we reached him. Turns out, the most obvious question to ask isn't always the one asked. I probably would have wanted to know why there was a baby in a car seat outside my apartment, but actually, Penn was more on the money.
Everyone else is seeing a baby, right?
Rafe and I both looked at him before we all peered back down at the tiny infant, sleeping soundly, wrapped in a blanket and wearing a little pink striped hat. Yes, I am. I looked up and down the corridor to see if there was someone standing there, waiting to claim this infant. But no, and I couldn't hear anyone trying to hold in their laughter as they pissed themselves at what they thought was the most hilarious prank they'd ever played. Although this was a stretch, even for my friends. I didn't know anyone who'd just had a baby, and I also didn't know anyone who'd be willing to part with their child, even to make one of my very real nightmares come true. I had one other neighbour on this floor, an actor, each of us taking one side of the building, and as far as I knew, he didn't have a child. He was also currently out of the country filming his latest movie. Rafe bent down and lifted out something I hadn't noticed, a thick brown envelope tucked into the side between the baby and the car seat, an envelope with my name on it. "Okay, this isn't fucking funny anymore. Which one of you two is responsible?" But I could tell by the looks on their faces that they were just as horrified as I was, and the ball-shriveling New York February cold we'd just walked in from had nothing on the icy chill spreading through my chest and rattling my bones. We stood there, all three of us, in a state of shock. The type of shock you only experience when you find an abandoned baby on your doorstep. "Barclay, stay here," I ordered, running to the elevator, pressing the buttons as fast as I could, hoping it would sense the emergency and arrive in seconds, which it did. The elevator dropped, following my stomach, which was currently located somewhere in the pits of hell. This had to be a joke. It had to be. And yet, even as I willed it, the tiny voice in my head was saying it wasn't. That baby had been left for a reason. Fuck. Who leaves a fucking baby? And how long had it been there? I'd been gone all day. I raced out of the elevator doors before they'd had a chance to fully open, and over to the concierge desk where the evening porter was on duty. "Kevin, did someone come and ask for me today?" He stopped typing into the computer he was using.
"Yes, sir. About an hour ago. She said she was a friend of yours and had to drop a package off. I remember because she had a baby with her."
My eyes widened in horror.
"And you let her up?"
The apartments in this building started at the low tens of millions, bought by the wealthy to ensure not only privacy, but the utmost security which they needed in their lives, and allowing someone up without permission would cause a major uproar among the residents. Aside from my movie star neighbour, I knew of at least 10 more A-list Hollywood types who owned apartments in this building, as well as many of my colleagues from the world of finance. I was probably one of the youngest residents, but I brought it for its old-world English charm and incredible views over Central Park, and no one socialised in this building anyway, so it didn't really matter.
"No, sir, of course not. You weren't home. I asked her if she wanted to wait or leave it with me, but she said she'd come back. My apologies. I forgot to tell you when you walked in."
"Well, she fucking got up somehow. Her package was a baby. She left her fucking baby. How could you not notice?" My voice bounced off the cavernous vestibule of the building, making my anger seem even more pronounced than it was, which was saying something, because I was on the verge of breathing fire and summoning a cloud of brimstone to rain down on their heads. The blood drained from his face so quickly, I was genuinely worried he might collapse.
What?
"There's a baby on my doorstep," I repeated slowly, so he didn't miss a single word. A hidden door opened behind him and out walked Graham, a second porter, and the one who was usually in charge, having clearly heard my shouting. To be fair, my current volume levels could probably raise the dead.
"Evening, Murray. Is everything okay?"
"No, everything is not okay. I want to know how a woman with a baby got up to my apartment and left it outside."
"Left her baby?"
His reaction mirrored Kevin's.
"Are you sure?"
The expression of incredulity my face was currently sporting told him, yes, I was fucking sure. My phone had been buzzing in my pocket the entire time I'd been shouting, and I reached in to turn it off, only to notice Penn's name.
"Hey, man, where did you go? You need to get back here."
"I'm in the lobby, trying to find out how the fuck someone got up to my apartment without a pass and left a baby outside my door." I was answering Penn, but all my animosity was directed straight at Graham and Kevin.
but it's clearly because the security here is as efficient as a chocolate fucking teapot.
Get them to bring you the security tapes. It'll be on there. But you need to come back.
Okay. I hung up and pointed to the cameras discreetly placed around the building. I want that footage, now. Bring it up to me. I stormed back the way I came, back to the epicenter of the explosion that was currently my life. Penn and Rafe had let themselves in, and I found them in the kitchen, the baby still in the car seat and currently parked on the island counter. I gave it a wide berth, like I would anything that had the potential to detonate, and perched on the kitchen table instead. Penn took one look at me and disappeared. Rafe had opened the letter and was reading through it, pages and pages of something I knew instinctively was about to blow my life apart. His expert eyes flickered as they scanned across the words. He was an excellent lawyer, even if he did look like he belonged in a biker gang most of the time. When he wasn't dressed like a choir boy in a suit and tie, he was usually seen with full sleeves of tats, riding about on one of his vintage Harleys, or in any number of his sports cars, especially the Bugatti. Do I want to know what the letter says? I mean, I didn't. I really, really didn't. He kept reading, his eyes still moving. Well, apparently, she's yours. The rest of my stomach bottomed out as he finally looked up, and I gripped onto the edges of the table to stop myself from falling over, because the room was spinning worse than anything any hangover could produce. How? I managed to croak. Do you remember last Memorial Day, when we were up at the house? I nodded, because even without specifics, I knew we'd been there. Every Memorial Day weekend since we'd been at college had been spent at the summer house Rafe's family owned in Bridgehampton. Yes? What about it? That was when it happened. Allegedly. Penn returned, carrying a bottle of 25-year-old Glenfiddich single malt scotch and three glasses. And anyway, that weekend is always boys, so there's no fucking way it happened then. Rafe shook his head. I thought that. But remember Rory and the boys turned up with that group of girls that met on the way and decided to bring them along too? Penn's paused in the pouring of the bottle as his memory came back. Fucking Rory. Rory was Rafe's youngest brother. He'd taken the weekend off from Harvard and brought his housemates, and while Rafe had never played varsity, Rory was the king, quarterback and captain of the football team. He was a legend among his peers and a magnet for all women. His whole house was, because they all played together and sport was currency. He turned up explaining to Rafe that a weekend of just guys was a wasted weekend, and the girls would join us for 24 hours, then leave. Which they did, but not before making it clear what they were up for. We'd all got very drunk, and I'd ended up wrapped around a beautiful brunette several times over the course of the evening, all night and the next morning. We never exchanged numbers, and afterwards went our separate ways, or rather, she'd left with the girls as Rory had agreed. And the most I could say about it was fun. Annabelle? Lizzie? Fuck! I can't remember what she was called, and I don't think I ever knew her last name. Reagan. He shook one of the pages at me. She clearly knew who you were. That wasn't hard. I was in the financial pages more often than not. Not to mention that the three of us were regularly featured in any number of fucking stupid lists of most eligible bachelors or whatever. As much as Rafe tried to stay under the radar with his do-good, not-for-profit legal aid firm, his family name got him noticed. And even if Penn wasn't currently on a one-man mission to fuck every single actress, model, singer between the ages of 18 and 40 in a massive but totally unnecessary act of rebellion, he was practically American aristocracy, and anything he did garnered headline news. Couple that with the fact my two brothers-in-law were part of New York's sporting elite. Bottom line, people knew who we were. We liked to party,
but we also worked fucking hard and had no plans to apologise for it, unless legally required to, which Penn had been, on more than one occasion. I want a paternity test. I have never had sex without suiting up. I agree, and I'll sort one out. But I have to say, I don't think this is financial. She signed over everything. There's not even a birth certificate, so we have to sort that immediately. She doesn't want this baby. My head fell in my hands. What the fuck was happening? Was I in some kind of alternate universe that I was about to return from at any second? Why didn't she have an abortion? Or put it up for adoption? Penn handed me a glass of scotch, which went straight down my throat. Women could do whatever they wanted with their bodies. I was not one to judge. But if you didn't want a kid, then don't have one to just give it away. My sister, Freddy, had been adopted, and there was no shame in that either. But he had a point, because however you looked at it, this situation was fucked up, and I'd been left to pick up the pieces. She said she found out too late and couldn't go through with adoption. She said she tried. She also said her family doesn't know. She's kept it a secret. She was still on her parents' insurance. Penn looked at my ashen face and asked the question I didn't want to. Fuck, how old was she? 25. I sighed in relief and pushed off the table, needing to pace. Fuck, fuck's sake. A secret. Why didn't she come to me sooner? I could have helped her. Dude, don't shout too loudly. Penn's eyes shot over to the baby. How long have we been here? Rafe looked at his watch. An hour. Fuck, I hissed, pulling on the ends of my hair. If I knew anything about babies, it was that they didn't sleep for long, and this bomb was ticking on borrowed time. What the fuck do I do? Was there anything else in the car seat? Like a return policy? Penn's lip was quivering, and at any other time I would have found it funny, likely something I would have said myself, but not right now. Right now my teeth were grinding hard to distract myself from the bile churning inside me. No, I seethed through my teeth. Like diapers, milk, we need something for when she wakes up. Penn peered around the car seat as gingerly as an explosives expert would a tripwire, patting gently before lifting the blanket, but came up empty. Nothing? Seriously? He shook his head with a grimace. He had sisters. He was also aware of the consequences of a screaming, hungry baby, and promptly snatched my keycard up and took off. I'll be back. Barclay got up and followed him, his tail wagging. Hello? A voice called, getting nearer. My head shot up from where it was resting on the table to see Graham hovering in the kitchen doorway, looking nervously at the car seat. Barclay returned with him glued to his side, sniffing excitedly around his pockets, hoping to be given one of the biscuits Graham usually carried with him. Traitor. Penn told me to come in. Tell me someone has come to claim the package. Even though deep down, I knew there was no way of that ever happening. No. He held out his hand. I have the security footage. Rafe raised an eyebrow, walking over and taking it from him. Thanks, Graham. Have you watched it? He nodded, his eyes holding mine but filling with remorse. I let her up. I'm sorry, Murray. I could never have imagined. I wanted to see what was on the USB before I decided whether I was feeling forgiving or not, seeing as either way there was still a baby asleep in my kitchen that someone was claiming to be mine. I leaned across the table and pulled my MacBook over, holding my hand in the air for Rafe to chuck me the footage. It fired up in black and white. She was wearing a bobble hat and a thick winter coat, the car seat down by her side. I watched her speak to Kevin and start to walk away, but then Kevin turned his back. She snuck around the side at the same time Graham had exited the third elevator and he'd swiped his card, letting her straight up. Everyone wanted to help a woman struggling with a baby. No one doubted that there would ever be an ulterior motive. My head dropped in my hands. I was going to be sick. I'm sorry, Murray. Graham's face was still ashen. It wasn't your fault. Anyone would have done the same. Let me know if there's anything you need, or anything we can do. Thanks. He didn't hang around for any longer than he had to, and I heard the door shut behind him as he made a swift exit. I looked back over at Rafe. Do we need to call the police? Do we have to tell anyone? When can we get this paternity test? I'll try and get someone here tonight. I can call in some favors. I suggest we don't go down the route of social services until we get the results. But if you are her father, and as nothing is filled out, we need to get it done immediately and get round the issue of the birth certificate. I'll see if I can get an extension. But if I do, it'll be one of days, not weeks, and you'll need to name her. Oh, Jesus. I could hear his words, understand them as they made their way into my brain, but the pressure of everything he was saying was bearing down on me like a thundercloud, and finally my body caught up. She really wasn't coming back. Who doesn't name their kid? I barely made it to the kitchen sink before I threw up everything I had in my stomach and more, until there was nothing left, and my internal organs were hanging on for dear life. Oh my God! My knuckles gripping the counter were as white as the fresh snow we'd been skiing on during our New Year trip to Jackson Hole. How had our regular Tuesday night game of basketball turned into a checklist of tasks I had to accomplish for a kid that may or may not be mine? Fucking bastard Tuesday! Penn arrived back and dumped several giant grocery bags from CVS on the counter. I heard him rummaging around in one before handing me a bottle of electrolytes. Rafe walked out with a phone to his ear. Thanks. I twisted the cap and swigged it, trying to rid myself of the acid burning my throat. I looked around at the hall. He must have bought the entire store out of diapers and formula. I was momentarily raised out of my haze to find Penn staring at me. I didn't know what to get, so I got everything I could find for a newborn. But I know my sister had this because I fed Romy with it once when I was babysitting. He ripped open a box and pulled out what appeared to be a pre-made bottle of formula, shaking it at me. The lady in the store was also very helpful. She offered to show me how to put on a diaper, but I said we knew. We do know, right? How many diapers have you changed? His shoulder lifted in a lopsided shrug. None. I always handed them back. What about you? Same. But it can't be that hard. He opened a packet and took one out, examining it, ripping the sticky tabs on the side before getting stuck to them himself as he tried to figure out which way round it went. And there didn't seem to be any instructions. We all stopped dead when a single piercing cry emitted from the car seat. Neither of us moved a muscle. We may have stopped breathing. Barclay started growling low. A minute later, we were still frozen to the spot. Can we move yet? The answer came from the baby as another garbled cry rang through the room. Penn stood there staring at me until I realized one of us needed to stop it, and by the look on his face, he designated that one to be me. I made my way over. Her little face was screwed up, her gummy mouth wide open, her lips quivering as she bawled. I took the blankets off her and unstrapped the buckle holding her in place. I had several nieces and nephews and I'd held them all, the most recent not much older than she was. But the weight of her, the sudden weight I could feel deep in my marrow was heavier than a ton of bricks. Her crying didn't stop though, the shock of a stranger lifting her into his arms doing nothing to soothe her. Because that's what I was, a total stranger. Penn removed the lid from the bottle he was still holding, only to reveal nothing on the top that would help her drink, and I'd seen enough babies feeding to know I couldn't pour it down her throat. Mate, hurry up. He tipped the box upside down and the rest of the bottles fell out, along with a packet of teats, turning into a race against time to fit them together and save our hearing before we were deafened forever. I snatched the bottle from his hand. Here goes nothing. Milk is milk, right?
I don't know, dude. Let's hope so, because this noise is going to make my ears bleed soon.
I moved it to her lips, like I'd done so many times before with my siblings' kids, but her eyes were still screwed shut, the crying going strong, and my panic shifted up another notch.
She doesn't want it. She will. Just hold it there.
I tried again, but nothing happened. What if she needs it warm? Should we warm it? How do we do that? He read the label on another bottle, his voice rising in agitation.
I don't know. It doesn't say. Why doesn't it say?
Barclay started whining. Rafe came back, removed the bottle from my hand, calmly adjusted the teat, then turned it upside down, shaking it until the milk appeared.
Now try.
He passed it back to me. Her lips clamped down and we were surrounded by crushing silence, the type of silence you could only hear after a car alarm stops from incessantly ringing, or when a baby finally stops crying. Rafe, Penn, and I let out simultaneous sighs.
Penn, can you get Laurie over? We need someone tonight, and better to keep this as quiet as possible for now, especially as we need an official medical sign-off on the birth certificate.
Yeah, probably.
Penn's younger sister, Laurie, was a pediatrician. He reached for his phone, dialing a number, then handed the phone to Rafe, who walked out again. Penn and I watched as this tiny baby ate like her life depended on it, and I realized I had no idea when she last ate. I had no idea about anything. I was completely clueless. And then she opened her eyes, eyes the exact same shade of green as my sister, Wolfie's, which were the exact same shade as my mother's and her mother's. The paternity test would be a formality. This little girl was mine. My daughter. 48 hours ago, I'd been at my sister's house for Sunday lunch, watching my 2-year-old niece, Florence, smear pudding all over her face. And my niece is cute, but she's cute when she's clean and not covered in chocolate pudding. 48 hours ago, I'd said, "Nope, I'm not ready for kids. No thanks." 48 hours ago, I was perfectly happy sowing my metaphorical wild oats, but apparently, one of my wild oats had stuck. My legs started to buckle under me and I sank to the floor, propped against the side of the counter. Rafe returned and the two of them sat down next to me.
Fuck. What the fuck am I going to do?
Laurie's coming over to take your DNA. We'll get the results back in 24 hours, so let's just wait until we hear back before we panic.
No, she's mine. She looks just like Wolf did.
They peered down at her. Her eyes are the same color.
What am I going to do? How am I going to look after a kid? Raise a daughter? I have no fucking clue. Jesus Christ, we were only supposed to be playing basketball.
I watched her still suckling at the bottle and the enormity of how massively my life had changed in a matter of seconds punched me hard in the face. The pressure and anxiety reached boiling point in my gut and pushed up through my chest, into my throat until I couldn't hold it in any longer.
Penn put his arm around me as I sobbed on his shoulder. It'll be okay. You're not going to do this on your own.
Rafe stood up. I'm ordering us burgers before Laurie arrives. Then I'm going to shower and we'll be borrowing some clean sweats. I peered up at him.
You guys are staying.
We might not live under the same roof anymore, but we all treated each of our places like we all lived there. All with keys and instructions to the doormen, they were allowed entry without a pass. There normally wouldn't be any question about them staying, but given a screaming baby had just been thrown into the equation, I was half expecting them to cut and run.
Buddy, we're not leaving you here tonight. This would be a nightmare for any one of us. He grinned. I'm just thankful it's you, not me.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?